Good evening and welcome. I'm Kelly Richards, CEO of the All Access Group and the host of All Access Radio. As a highly sought-after consultant, super connector, trusted advisor, celebrity wrangler, and thought leader, I connect innovators and storytellers from Silicon Valley to Hollywood. And as a trusted advisor, I transform the quality of people's lives. I'm also the author of the best-selling ebook, The Magic and Moxie of Apple, An Insider's View. Tonight's guest on the show is Guy Kawasaki, a longtime Apple alum of mine. Guy is the chief evangelist of Canva, an online graphic design tool. He's also on the board of trustees of the Wikimedia Foundation, a brand ambassador for Mercedes-Benz USA, and an executive fellow of the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley. Of course, he was also the chief evangelist at Apple. And he's also the author of Art of the Start 2.0, The Art of Social Media, Enchantment, and 9 other books. I believe they're all bestsellers. Guy has a BA from Stanford and an MBA from UCLA, as well as an honorary doctorate from Babson College. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
It's so great to have you. I very much appreciate your time. I realize how precious it is. And I guess I want to start by asking a question I typically start all my shows with, which is, you know, having a trusted advisor is so important. I'm sure you'll agree. And I wonder who some of your advisors and mentors have been along the way, and of course, whether you've mentored others.
I've had 3. The first was in the jewelry business, a guy named Marty Groover. Then I had one at Apple. His name was Albert Eisenstadt. And the third one was Marilyn Delborg Delfis. So from the first one, Marty, I learned sales. From the second one, I learned how to navigate Apple from Al. And the third one, Marilyn, I learned to be a writer.
Boy.
And the second half of your question was, have I ever been a mentor? And the answer to that is honestly no. I am not a good mentor because, frankly, I just don't have the patience and the kind of good, supportive, bedside manner.
That's
just
fair,
not
Guy.
My thing.
That's fair, although I would argue that you've indirectly mentored many just by sharing with the generosity that you've exhibited in sharing your wisdom over the years and your insights.
Well, you know, you could make that case. I hope people buy that case, but you know, the concept that Guy is going to meet with you once a month for 2 or 3 hours, don't hold your breath.
No, I follow that. Well, of course, you and I share the experience of having been at Apple and worked closely with Steve, both of us. Could you talk a bit for people who don't know, and I realize it's a long time ago now, about your work and your role as the chief evangelist of the Mac? And,
sure.
and a special memory you want to share about your time with Steve that's really
sure.
served you.
So I worked for Apple twice. The first time what I did was the software evangelism. So my job was to meet with software and hardware companies to convince them to do Mac products. That was 83 to 87. I returned to Apple in 95 and worked 2 more years. So 95 to 97, I was Apple's chief evangelist. At that point, it was to preserve the Macintosh cult as opposed to working directly with only developers.
Right.
So those were my 2 roles at Apple.
And how about any special memory, anecdote about your
sure.
time with
So Beth? My favorite story of Steve is that one day I'm working in my cubicle and he shows up with a person that I've never met and he asked me what I thought about this company and its products. And I basically told him the company was crap and the product was crap, too slow, doesn't take advantage of graphics, doesn't take advantage of color, video, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of this diatribe, he turns to me and he says, I want you to meet the CEO of the company.
Well,
that's what it was like.
You know, I know that firsthand, but, you know, 2 of his favorite words, of course, were crap and bozo. So you already
figured
that out. And also, we kind of glossed over the role of evangelism. But in all candor, I think it's fair to say that because of you having had that role, that title, if you like, Guy, I don't think that term really was prolific around Silicon Valley until you carried that mantle. So for people that don't really get the importance of having an evangelist, could you expound on that for a second?
You mean what does evangelism mean?
Yeah, what does it mean? What's the role and why is it important?
Okay, so evangelism comes from Greek words meaning bringing the good news. And I brought the good news of Macintosh, increasing people's creativity and productivity. Today, I'm the evangelist, chief evangelist of Canva, and the good news here is the democratization of design. So the role of an evangelist is to spread the good news, to show people why your product or service makes their lives better.
Yes, and specific to Canva, let's segue to that for a minute. What are you so excited about with Canva? More specifically, what does it enable someone to do?
Well, basically, Canva enables people without any graphics, design, experience, maybe even skill, to create great graphics. Graphics like for social media, book covers, email headers, flyers. Let's see, what else? Presentations. I mean, just go down the line. We probably have 60 or 70 templates. Sets of templates of like 100 each.
It's one of those no-brainers. It's like, why does it take so long to come up with a company that does that? It seems like it's, you know, it's a no-brainer.
From your mouth to God's ears, yeah.
Well, switching gears a little bit, Guy, last year you joined the board for the Wikimedia Foundation, not to be confused with Wikipedia, which I'm not sure a lot of people have necessarily embraced Wikimedia. So, first of all, tell us about the foundation, and then I have a on question of that.
So the foundation has about 250 employees, and it is sort of the administrative and management part of Wikipedia and the other wiki properties. Not everything that begins with wiki is Wikimedia. For example, WikiLeaks is not Wikimedia. That's a completely different thing. And so there is a group of employees who keep the thing running. In addition, there are literally hundreds of thousands of volunteers who have written 5 million articles.
Fabulous. And tell us, as a follow-on to that, why you believe the democracy of information is important and what you do in your own career to make your wisdom available to everybody.
Sure. So, I mean, I don't know. Do I really need to explain to people why democratizing information is important? I mean, you kind of flunk the IQ test if you think, oh, yeah, like let's keep information opaque, let's keep it in pockets, let's make it so that only rich people can have information. I mean, you know, what idiot believes that? So Wikipedia is in the business of democratizing information so that basically everything you want to know about is in Wikipedia and is freely and easily available. I mean, that's the goal. And I would say, you know, of the challenges that the world faces, number one is global warming, number two is human rights, and number three is the democratization of knowledge.
Yeah, and I think if we lose any of those things, we're, you know, I don't even want to contemplate the consequences.
Yeah.
But tell us what you do in your work, Guy, that enables you to democratize the wisdom that you make available so freely to everybody.
My mantra is to empower people. So I like to empower people with my writing, my speaking, even my social media. I'm constantly curating great information. So I'm trying to help people, be all they can be. And now don't get me wrong. You know, I get paid for speeches and I sell books, but everything I know you could get for free if you were willing to search on the internet and use Google and read and use YouTube.
But your role is truly that of a curator, and you're distilling the essence of it so that people can really grasp.
I curate and I create. So I've created about 13 books, and I've created video, but
true,
I've curated where other people have, I think, added value, because part of the value today is finding good stuff, not just creating good stuff.
And ideally, creating something with more meaning that might be a little more original around the basis of somebody else's content, where that makes sense.
Well, yeah, one must know what to steal, yes.
Now, Guy, is there a certain experience that you had as a young person that stands out to you as a crystallizing moment?
Yeah.
And drive to empower other people?
No, I wish I could tell you that. You know, I like came over on the Mayflower. Well, I guess I'm not that old, but, you know, I came over from some ship and I saw the Statue of Liberty and I went to Ellis Island and it changed my life. But there's no such thing. I mean, we can make it up retroactively, but, you know, I come from a lower middle class family in Hawaii, very kind of, you know, middle of the road family. I didn't have a lemonade stand at 8. You know, I didn't start a foundation at 12. I didn't get into Dartmouth at 14. I'm just like, I don't have that great story behind me. I just do what I do.
But something led you to, maybe it was just fate, that to this whole concept of evangelism that really was the pivot to the rest of your career.
Well, certainly Steve Jobs changed my life. So with the introduction and creation of Macintosh, it was not only a great computer, it also showed me a way, and the way was evangelism.
Do you think it was like Forrest Gump, where you just kind of were lucky enough to trip over Steve and fall into that role?
Yes. Honestly, yes. Yes.
Wow.
That was luck.
And then what led you to write this fabulous string of books that have really been, you know, they're just so pivotal to the business culture of anybody in innovation and entrepreneurialism?
Well, you know, as an author, you get to ask this question often, and many authors have very good answers about how they felt a moral obligation to spread knowledge, to increase literacy, to change the world, et cetera, et cetera. I will tell you, the other factor is royalty.
Royalty,
yes, royalty.
Yep, and they've done pretty well by you.
An honest author will tell you royalty is a motivating force.
Yeah, and of course that led to speaking as well, and
yes.
You do a lot of it.
I speak 75 times a year, yeah, all over the world.
Almost as much as Metallica in terms of your often you're
as
on the road.
As much as who?
Metallica.
Oh.
You know, how many shows they play a year. You're on the road a lot.
I am on the road a lot, but, you know.
I can recall you speaking last year at an event I was lucky enough to attend at Women in Consulting.
Yep.
And you were flying out that evening to New Zealand to go speak
yep.
over there.
Yep. And it was in Mountain View at that, right next to the lake there, right?
Michaels.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, of all the books, Guy, and there have been, as we say, so many, one of my favorites truly is Enchantment. And of course, I love the title as well. Could you tell us a personal story behind one of the key lessons from that book in particular that people should really pay attention to?
Sure. So Enchantment is, if you will, sort of my attempt at emulating Dale Carnegie 70 years later. So it is about influence and persuasion. You know, Dale Carnegie didn't have sales through media when he was around. So I think that the three keys to Enchantment are that you're likable, that you're trustworthy, and that you're competent. And if you get those three, you know, everything else is easy. So my favorite story about likability is I met Richard Branson, and he asked me if I flew on Virgin. I told him no, so he got down on his knees and started polishing my shoes with his jacket. So that's likability. As far as trustworthiness, I like to cite Zappos, where they pay shipping both ways if you don't like the shoes. And competence, I would say it's Apple. You know, they make deep, intelligent, complete, elegant, and empowering products.
Very true.
So if you have the competence of Apple, the likability of Richard Branson, and the trustworthiness of Apple's, you pretty much are going to be enchanting.
I would think so, yeah. And of course, your most recent book is Art of the Start 2.0, a refresh
yeah.
from the original Art of the Start. In which you claim that business plans are no longer necessary.
Yes.
And I wonder, what is necessary? What are the components necessary to start a successful business, in your opinion?
Well, hard work and luck, but I don't think that's what you're asking. I think the start is a great prototype. The reason that companies exist is not to create a great pitch, plan, or forecast. It is to create a great product that in turn creates customers. And this sounds like a duh-ism, but I'm telling you, like many entrepreneurs, they think that the pitch is the goal of the company, or raising money is the goal. It's not at all. I mean, that's a necessary evil, if you will, but that's not when you should declare success.
Well, wouldn't you also say things like passion, perseverance, something that's unique in the marketplace, and a great team are key elements?
I mean, no, I'm not going to argue against those, but to me, not that you could separate these factors, but if you said to me, Guy, you could have a great team, you could have a great product, or you could have a great market, you know, pick one, I would...
Yeah, and you and I see a lot in Silicon Valley in terms of potential disruption and innovation, and, you know, we're always looking for the, you know, the four-leaf clover.
Yeah.
But there are some. There are some that knock it out of the park, and others that maybe just below the surface, and they're just missing one key factor that would knock them over the top.
And those are so rare.
Yeah, and yet we live in the middle of the clover field, such as it is.
Yes, yes.
Now, I want to shift gears and talk a bit about social media, because I know this is a huge part of your life, and it has been for the last several years. And you seem to have a stance that social media has replaced PR and advertising as the new form of promotion in many cases. How would you counter the claims of others that Facebook and Twitter could be a waste of time for entrepreneurs?
You know, if an entrepreneur, okay, I guess it depends on what kind of entrepreneur, right? So if you're starting an airplane company, yeah, you probably aren't going to tweet so that people buy your airplane. If you're starting the cure for cancer, you're probably not going to tweet and say, okay, I've cured breast cancer, come on down, you know, click here and get a sample, because the FDA will prevent you. But for small business and entrepreneurs, you know, other than maybe total B2B or total biotech, social media is the best thing ever happened to them. It makes marketing fast, free, and ubiquitous. I mean, what is not to like? I don't understand. So if an entrepreneur says that they don't get social media at this point, I think that's kind of an IQ test at this point.
Yeah, and probably a death knell in a certain sense. I mean, I know people that say small business owners and entrepreneurs shouldn't waste their time on social media. And I don't know
and
what to say.
Do what?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly can't afford expensive PR firms.
Right.
So how are they going to get the word out about what they're doing if they don't do social media?
But, I have no idea.
But
ask them that question.
Preaching to the choir. But there are many social media channels. So if you're a small startup and you need to get the word out, what are your favorite couple of channels that make sense for virtually every startup entrepreneur?
If I had to pick one, I would start with Facebook, because Facebook has this fantastic ability to truly segregate a market, right? You could truly say, I want only people living in America who are male, who are such and such age, you know, this kind of thing. I don't know how you could do that with any other platform, literally.
Mm-hmm. And be as effective and reach as broad of an audience in real time. Yeah.
Yeah. What am I missing? I mean, you know, like, it just boggles my mind if people say that they don't want to use social media. Like, it's kind of like saying they don't want to use social media is like a company saying 15 years ago, I don't need a website. You know,
yeah.
Amazon needs a website. They need to sell DVDs and books. But, you know, I'm a restaurant. People aren't going to, you know, book reservations online. People aren't going to look at my menu online. People aren't going to decide to come to my restaurant. I just need Yellow Pages and a phone number. And, you know, who would say that today?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nobody we know.
Nobody we know who is going to last.
No. And speaking of which, what do you think in a world where startups come and go, and even some big companies aren't around anymore that were big a decade ago, what do you think is something that accounts for longevity? A company's
constantly reinventing their products. I mean, that's what you have to credit Apple with, right? So Apple II, Macintosh, iPhone, iPod, iPad.
Yep.
You know, there's not that many good examples.
Yeah. And even somebody like Sony, who had a whole vertical chain to integrate across multiple disciplines, couldn't get it together to coordinate and synchronize and stay at the top of the heap.
You have to say that Sony is, I don't know, 75 years old, right? So Apple is 40 years old. Let's see what happens. It ain't over till it's over, right?
Yeah, fair enough. I get that. So these days, how do you spend your time, Guy? Is it truly a mix of primarily speaking, writing, social media, and Canva?
Basically it's social media and email for Canva and Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I do a lot of work with Wikipedia. So.
Yeah, I bet you do. And are you working on a new book that you can reference and tease?
I'm not sure. I have a draft going, but it's not clear to me it's a book yet. It's going to be a collection of the stories that have changed my life. You could kind of call it like chicken soup for guy's soul.
I love it.
Yeah.
And any time frame of when that's going to come out, this year, later this year?
I have no idea. If I'm so busy with Canva and Wikipedia, you know, I can write like 15 minutes a month, so it's going to be a while.
Yeah, I follow. And for people that might want to engage you to be a speaker, how do they go about doing that?
You pay a lot of money.
I mean, is there a website they go to?
Oh, yeah. You know, at GuyKawasaki.com, there's a tab about speaking. And, you know, it's that simple. I have four children, so I don't get on an airplane for free anymore. I don't care, you know, how great your cause and how strategic it would be for my life. I am 61 years old. I have four children. I am not sowing anymore. I am reaping.
Yeah, as you should. You paid your dues.
I did pay my dues.
Listen, I've got just two last questions, and I'm going to let you, because we both talk so fast that we've gone half the time that I normally would with somebody. What is one piece of advice, Guy, that you received early on in your career that really influenced you consistently throughout your own journey that you could share with the listeners today?
That piece of advice would be to never ask people to do something that you would not do.
Mm-hmm. That's sound. And you feel like you pretty much honored that consistently throughout your path. Yeah.
Yes.
And I guess the final question, Guy, is we talked a little bit about what comes next for you.
Yeah.
Given the fact that you've got four kids, you've already accomplished so much. When you think about your legacy, which, let's face it, is larger than most I know, is there one project or collaboration that maybe has been sitting on the shelf in the back of your mind that you've not yet started but you dream about as a puzzle piece and as part of your legacy?
Nope. I'm not that cerebral.
Yeah, okay.
Really, I'm not. Seriously, I'm not being humble. I'm telling you, I'm not that cerebral. I don't think like that. So listen, I've given hundreds of speeches. I've written more than a dozen books. I've helped, you know, some very cool products. I have four children. I don't have tens of millions of dollars, but I'm not poor, and you know, my health is good. I might not be Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates, but you know, I'm doing all right.
You know what? From a legacy perspective, from where I sit, Guy, and I'm a little bit biased, but I'll say it anyway. I think you've lived a really great life to this point, and Godspeed. I hope you have another 40 years plus with us.
Well, thank you.
Seriously. But thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Take care.
I wish you well.
I wish you well, too.
I say goodnight to our listeners. We'll hear you again next week on the next edition of All Access Radio. Good night, everybody.